Welcome to the Wealthy, Wealthy, Wise podcast. If you would like to listen in on thought-provoking conversations with countercultural thought leaders and experts in the fields of wealth, health, and relationships, the three keys to having what I call a wealthy, wealthy life, then this is the show for you. I'm Christina Wise, real estate investor, best-selling author of Falling for Money, and founder of Wealthy Wealthy, where I serve as your personal guide to money, health, and happiness. Welcome back. This is Christina Wise, your host. In this episode, I talk with my good friend, Dr. Sean Tassone. Sean is an OBGYN, and he's also board certified by the American Board of Integrative Medicine. In addition to being an MD, he also holds a PhD in mind-body medicine. He is highly regarded as a patient advocate, and his work includes studies and publications on spirituality in medical care, whole foods to heal the human body, and integrative medicine to heal where Western medicine falls short. Not to mention, he's a leader in the field of hormones for optimal health and longevity. During our conversation, Sean teaches the basics about hormones that we all should know, but probably don't. How they play a crucial role in how we feel, think, and behave, and how if they're off just a bit, they can negatively impact our sleep, our weight, our moods, and our success. And how just a few tweaks can make a radical difference to not only how we can feel better in our own bodies, but also how some changes can positively impact our relationships and our performance. In other words, our ability to feel more love and make more money. If you wish to feel better and or have more energy and good vibes, you'll wish to listen in. Please enjoy my talk with Dr. Sean Tassone. Sean, I'm so excited to have this call with you today. The funny thing is you live in Austin, Texas with me, but where are you right now? Maui?
Maui. Yeah. In Hawaii. And it's raining, in both places.
It is. Well, all right. Well, let's jump in. So for everybody listening in, you're a dear friend of mine, and I'm so grateful to have you in my life. And it's just super fun to be able to share who you are and your genius with all of those listening in. And you have such a special, expertise, and you do things very differently in being a doctor, the type of doctor you are, that you'll share with everybody. So if you would just give a little background, like who you are and what you do.
Well, I'm a OBGYN here in Austin. I trained in the traditional model, did my residency at the University of Oklahoma, kind of allopathically trained. During my residency, interestingly enough, I'm an only child, which is probably explains a lot about me. But my mom was diagnosed with ovarian cancer in my second year. And so I had this knowledge base of what to do, what ovarian cancer was, what to do about it, surgery, chemo, the whole nine yards. But when my mom went through the whole process and she passed away 5 years later at the age of 56, I couldn't help her just be better. You know, like she'd go through chemo and feel miserable, her joints were achy and she lost her hair and all the side effects from the surgeries and the chemos. And I didn't know what to do. And I felt pretty helpless knowing all this stuff that I know. And so when my mom passed away a couple of years later, I just decided, you know, naturally when you go through a spiritual heartbreak, you go to Sedona. That seems to be the place to go. So I was in Sedona and I was reading this crazy book at the time, Andrew Weil's 8 Weeks to Optimum Health. And in that book, he was talking about crazy stuff like CoQ10 and fish oil and all this crazy stuff. Cause this was like, you know, 18 years ago. And I just decided to, the fellowship that he was starting was at the University of Arizona, and I lived in Tucson at the time, so it was, you know, synchronicity. I decided to take the program, and so I did a 2-year fellowship in integrative medicine, which really, there was an 8-week pod in there on spirituality and health, and that really kind of conked me on the head, like, wow, this is really crazy that this, you know, there is a spiritual aspect to health. I know for some people it might seem like, yeah, duh. But for me, it was kind of like a bonk on the head. So in typical fashion, I wanted to learn more and decided to get a PhD in what was basically philosophy. But my focus was mind-body medicine. And I traveled to Brazil and Peru and other places and studied and worked with shamans and alternative healers on the possibility of non-locality or healing at a distance, and just saw some crazy things. I've been buried alive overnight. And so I still have the antibiotics and I do robotic surgery, but I also have this, I call it my woo factor, that I can dip into at times. And so I have this really bipolar way of looking at medicine, I guess, you know, and it's all because of, I guess, my spiritual dark night of the soul with my mom passing away.
Yeah. So you have an MD behind your name and a PhD behind your name, which that is very uncommon. And like you said, this spiritual component as well. And what do you see the difference between being allopathically trained, like the Western trained, and really in your practice today as an OBG, how do you blend these two philosophies together? Because they really are philosophically different when you're looking at more the holistic, let's say more Eastern methodologies, and then the more allopathic Western methodologies. And how do you see these two parts of Sean show up in your day-to-day life and practice of as you're a healer, like in part of your healing?
So I think the model is basically, it's pretty easy to break it down. Allopathic medicine or traditional medicine, active healer, passive patient. In the alternative world, it's active patient, passive healer. So the basic dichotomy here is the patient heals themselves 90% of the time. And I think that it's one of those things, you know, the old adage, if I'm in a car accident, take me to the emergency room. If I have the flu or a cold, take me to my naturopath. I think that, or my homeopath. And that's really, there is a place for all of us. I think that the difference is Western medicine thinks that they are there for everything. And the reality is we're not, and we're good at what we do, and we're good when we need it. But we, you know, I have a lot of friends that don't want any medications, you know, and I have to learn, I've had to learn as a provider, especially in Austin, that there, you have to know your patients. So there might be patients that come in that really want that prescription. They really want that quick fix. And I'm not going to judge them. That's part of who I am. That's part of my identity. I can help with that. But there's a lot of patients that don't want that. And I think for me, it's been a journey to often I learn because they come in with questions about things that I have to then go figure out. And so I think that's been really beneficial for me, was to learn from that that passive model, being a passive healer, because as a surgeon by trade, I want to fix things. That's what I do, you know. Sadly, when I was a resident, we used to have this phrase that we would say all the time, is that you heal with steel, meaning you cut people open. And it was, you know, looking back at it, it was horrible, but that's just what we thought. And so now it's like, I understand that the body can heal itself, but there's sometimes it can't. And that's why I'm here with that. But then I also have this other side of me. So it's kind of, at times I have one foot in one realm, and it's crazy because I will get criticized on both sides, you know, depending on what website I'm on, until people realize that I'm, you know, oh, he is an allopath, but he also does this, or he, you know, it's like, it's kind of funny because I'll get kind of criticized on both sides sometimes.
Yeah, I bet. And that makes me think that a lot of MDs are being even thrown under the bus a little bit by certain communities, like, oh, bad people, bad things. And how do you relate to that as far as, you know, and it's almost like I found that people are claiming to be, let's say, healers or even doctors. And like, how would you distinguish even the education or the knowledge that really does differentiate an MD, whether or not that they believe in the more spiritual side or the, you know, and whether or not they have like more this integrative alternative side to them? What is it different about? I mean, with the MDs, I mean, there's an important aspect to that level and depth and longevity of training, right? So how do you respond to this maybe being thrown under the bus just because you have these couple initials behind your name?
My critique of both sides would be the allopathic side. My colleagues on this side, they have this mindset that they basically rule the world and that they understand all of it. My critique on the other side is, well, they bash the medicine side too much, and yet they want to use the word medicine in everything they do. So regenerative medicine, functional medicine, integrative medicine, they want to use the word medicine because they know it conveys this expertise, but yet then they bash the medical community. And so it's, you can't have it both ways. And my concern now is that there is this death of expertise. There's this, everybody's an expert. So in my genre, everybody's a hormone expert, even though they maybe took a 4-day course at A4M or something like that. They're now an expert in women's health and hormones. And it gets confusing for the patients. And I think it raises the hackles of the medical community who has done a 4-year post-grad, a 4-year residency, sometimes more training, that they are being kind of taken down. And I call this, I have a talk that I give to acupuncturists called the beef stroganoff principle. It's like, you can't go up to a doctor and talk about woo science without speaking to them in their language. So you can't say beef with noodles. You have to say beef stroganoff. If you want to, maybe they don't know what beef with noodles is, and they won't order it because they don't know. But if you said it in a term that's similar to beef stroganoff, meaning double-blinded placebo-controlled trials. Now, I'm not against the N of one, meaning if it helps one person, that's great, but that's not scientific. That's anecdotal. And so I think that it's on both sides, but I think the problem is both sides won't, nobody wants to meet in the middle. There's this, everybody's a doctor. So you can be a doctor of anything. I have a niece who's I love her to death. She's a doctor of physical therapy. What happens is these professions now, they add an extra year and they get a doctorate of whatever it is they're in, and then they call themselves doctors. Well, it confuses the realm. There's a nurse I know who's a doctor of nursing, and she calls herself Dr. So-and-so. And it's like, well, but she's not a doctor, technically. She's a nurse. So everybody wants the title doctor. But it's so confusing. Like, you can be a doctor of education. It's a different, and I think PhDs, MDs, DOs, that's a doctorate. That's a doctor and something you can hold up. But being a doctor of something that's kind of like, there's a new thing for PAs now, and I'm not bashing PAs, I love them. But the PAs now have invented this extra year, and they can be a doctor of medical health or something like that, which doesn't exist. It's not a real thing, but it's been made up. So now PAs can call themselves doctors. And it's like, I don't know why everybody just can't be happy with what they do and what they are, you know?
Yeah. And it makes it confusing for the lay person, for the patient. And you and I were talking not too long ago, we were in a similar room, and I don't know, there were 100 people there with the name tags that are on the cardboard, you know, tents. And it was almost everyone was a doctor. I was like the one woman out that wasn't a doctor before, you know, like the DR before my name. And then I started looking around, and I said, Sean, man, look at, this is a big room of all these doctors. And it finally became the awareness, like, they is a doctor of, like, what you're talking about. And there was maybe 3 MDs in the room, and everybody else was, you know, a doctor. And I think what you said to me, if doctor's in front of the name, it might be something to look at and look, maybe, is it an MD, a PhD, or a DO that really says it's a physician? Which is that, would that be a different way to distinguish one from the other if that matters?
Well, it's the same thing. And, you know, I try not to get down into the weeds with this, but if you way back when we used to have yellow pages, chiropractors were put in the category with physicians. And that's splitting hairs, I suppose, but okay. Chiropractors now do everything. They do hormones. They do, you know, there's a doctor of, there's functional neurologists. That's a completely made up term. Functional endocrinologist, a completely made up profession. And it's super confusing for patients because they think, oh, this is an endocrinologist, when the reality is it's a naturopath who's practicing endocrinology type things, but they're not an endocrinologist. There's a woman in Austin who is an acupuncturist, which I think is great. I love acupuncture, but she's, in her description, calls herself an OBGYN. And I reached out to her and I said, are you actually an OBGYN or do you practice women's health? And she said, she got very upset with me saying I was trying to push her down. And I was like, no, I spent 8 years training to become an OBGYN, and I got board certified, and I went through all this stuff so I could call myself that, and to have somebody that really didn't do that, it angers me a little bit. It's like, I do get a little protective of that. Just like you wouldn't want me to say I'm an acupuncturist because I went to a weekend course and learned how to do acupuncture. And I think, like you said, it gets confusing to patients if they say, oh, she's an OBGYN, and they go see her and she's not. I sometimes feel like it's a way to get patients in the door, but I really try not to get bogged down and all that, because honestly, going to these meetings that we go to, I would love for that woman to send me patients. Like if she got somebody that was really difficult hormonally or whatever, and I could send her patients. And the whole point of integrative medicine that I like is the integration is just building a team effort around, you know, healthcare, because I'm not an acupuncturist. I'm not a Chinese medicine doctor, but I would like to refer people to those folks if I think it would be beneficial, and vice versa. So I think that's where we should go. But right now I think we're in this very dichotomous place where everybody wants a title and everybody's fighting to make a living. And I think there's plenty of people to go around.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I just wanted to, I think I know I'm confused, and I was confused until you shared with me a little bit about what you just shared on air. So that way we just have the information we need to make educated, informed decisions about whom we want to go to. All right, let's switch gears a little bit. So you're an OBG. So, I mean, that's pretty obvious. And, but now I guess your real specialty, and you're an author and have a book that's going to be coming out, and really talking more on the women's health and the hormonal side. And like you said, a lot of people have gone to some hormone classes, but share with me from your education and background, both education and anecdotally, from your years in practice, why hormones? Like, what are you noticing? And where we didn't even talk about hormones 10 years ago, and now hormones are everywhere. So give us a little one-on-one about what are hormones really, and how do they work? And then follow up from that is, when do we know they're not working right, meaning they're out of balance, like from your point of view?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously as OBGYNs, we learn about hormones from the get-go. Back in the day, that was synthetic, mostly Prempro, Premarin, you know, all the synthetic type things, until the plant-based medications came out. And now you have bioidentical pharmaceutical medications. Back then we didn't. About 15 years ago, I was kind of dabbling in this whole voodoo of bioidentical hormones, and I would get criticized for prescribing these hormones. And what happened to me was, there was this one day I was sitting in the office, and all of a sudden my phones were just going off the hook. I mean, 200 new patients or something crazy like that in one day. And what had happened was, Suzanne Summers was on Oprah for her book, Sexy Years. And in the back of her book, she listed me as a reference for the entire state of Arizona as an expert in hormones. And it was, I mean, I was dabbling at the time, but I wouldn't have considered myself an expert because I had all of these people come in. Again, had to learn really fast what they were reading, and you know, they'd come in with her book all tabbed and, you know, all these color-coded. And I was like, I gotta figure this out. And so over time then, and that's the other thing, is expertise comes from doing, not from just saying you are. And so in Malcolm Gladwell's book, you know, Tipping Point or Outliers, I think, talks about the 10,000 hours or whatever to make an expert. Well, I mean, I figured it out the other day. If you saw 5 new patients a week at an hour visit, it would take you 20 years to be an expert in something. So for these people that don't have this huge practice, to call themselves an expert in something, or a guru, that's a big word people use, it really is kind of misleading. But if, you know, I've seen like 40,000 patients for hormone replacement. And so, yeah, it does convey expertise just because you've done it a gazillion times. As far as why we're seeing hormones now, I think there's a couple of reasons. One is we live too long. I think we started living so long, so fast that evolution hasn't had a chance to catch up. I think in a few hundred years, menopause won't be 50, it'll probably be 60 or 70. And so what happens is we're not just living life, we're actually living well into our 80s and 90s now. And women don't want to suffer. I think, you know, that's the other thing is when my grandmother went through, I remember asking her, did you go through menopause? She's like, I don't know. And just because she's this old Italian woman who they didn't talk about stuff, you know, they just suffered through it and she was fine. But or at least she thought she was fine. She just didn't want to complain about it because her husband was in the war and all this other stuff. And so now we're living and we're active and you know, we're sexually active and into these later ages. And now if you look at it, and the other thing is, unfortunately, hormones are a big business. You've got people putting in pellets, which make tons of money. I think they're horrible personally, but they make tons of money with it. It's a cash cow, and even as a cash cow for men, because there's testosterone clinics, you know, all over the place too. And so I think hormonal health is just, it's a fad currently. I think it makes a lot of money for some people. And unfortunately, that's just the truth. Now, as far as imbalance goes, I think you can, you know, I have this saying where I say normal isn't normal if you feel hormonal. And because what happens now is women will come in all the time and they'll say, I'm tired. I'm gaining weight. I'm, you know, I don't feel like myself. I can't get out of bed. I'm depressed. And the doctor will draw their hormones and they'll say, oh, you're just getting older. Everything's fine. The reality is if you don't feel normal, then chances are it's not normal. And normal is just a range. So what happens is, we've got women that are kind of getting minimized by the healthcare community on my side of things. And we know that 83% of women feel discriminated by the healthcare system in a study that just came out. And in an emergency room situation, it takes women 18 minutes longer to get pain medication than men. And I think that's a telltale sign of what's happening. And so women want to live better. They want to live longer and they want to have a productive life. And this is now even bleeding into younger women. I see women in their 20s that come in with, you know, they just don't feel right. And they'll have a thyroid that's in the normal range, but it's in the 10th percentile. Well, maybe you'd feel better in the 70th percentile. It's still normal, but maybe you'd feel better. And so I think it's just, you know, people are just, I think, advocating more for themselves as well.
Yeah. So is it age that's throwing off? Obviously hormones change when we're pregnant, when approaching, I'd say menopause and absolutely menopause. So what's happening through these different stages as they're changing? And then when you start, let's say, feeling better, perimenopause, menopause ages, what do you recommend women do to start feeling better? Because they're noticing I'm just feeling different, or I'm not sleeping as well. I'm more agitated. I'm having night sweats, or, you know, like real symptoms of hormonal imbalance.
Well, you know, honestly, it's recognizing one that you're not who you want to be. And once you get to that point, not taking no for an answer. If you see somebody, your GYN, a lot of women will go to their family practitioner or their GYN and they'll get blood drawn and the blood will say that they're in the normal range for whatever. The other thing is that doctors don't traditionally look at is estrogen and progesterone, not whether they're in the normal range, but what's the ratio? What is the estrogen to progesterone ratio? And I think that makes a huge difference. And then if you're told that everything is okay and you're fine, but you feel like garbage, that's not fine, that you need to take those results and find somebody else that can actually help you. And the problem is weeding through, you know, I would say this, and this is just my own personal opinion. You can find somebody that's going to help you. You just have to keep plugging away at it. And unfortunately, you might spend some money doing that, depending on where I take insurance. And there's plenty of people out there that do great jobs that take cash. But it's just advocating for yourself, asking around, looking on the internet. You know, I think the reviews are interesting. I have some bad reviews. Can't please everybody. But overall, I have a lot of good reviews. And I think if you find somebody that's got, you know, 200 five-star reviews and 3 one-star reviews, there's probably a good indication that that's a good provider. And then read them. You know, he listened to me, or she listened to me, or she didn't listen to me. I mean, if you go online in Austin, there's an endocrinologist that has horrible reviews and over and over and over again. And it's like, doesn't listen, doesn't listen, doesn't listen. So that's probably not somebody you'd want to see, right? I mean, so it's just advocating for yourself and knowing that you are the only person that knows you. To have somebody tell you, oh, that you're fine, but you don't feel fine, is ridiculous.
Well, and I mean, the body is changing and the hormones are changing, right? So yep. Especially as we age, and let's say we're more towards over 40, maybe 50, what's happening? And then, you know, so, I mean, since it's changing, they're probably likely going to be start feeling, going out of balance in a way, right? Just because we age, and that therefore it's pretty predictable that most women are going to be feeling off or experiencing some of these symptoms. And I mean, is it 9 out of 10, 8 out of 10? I mean, it's an aging factor. The hormones change.
I think it's a severity and it depends on the person. But the reality is the number one hormonal imbalance that I see, I have a quiz on my website and I probably had 20,000 people take the quiz. The number one hormone imbalance right now is testosterone deficiency across the board. I was surprised to see that. But women in general, their testosterone deficiency is that, okay, you crash and burn around 3 or 4 in the afternoon. Like, that's when you want to take a nap. Things that you used to enjoy in life, you just don't care about anymore. You kind of lose that zest for life. You aren't interested in sex anymore. You know, your workouts aren't what they used to be. And I think that that's very common, even into 30s and sometimes late 20s, can be a problem for some women, especially women on birth control pills, because the estrogen and birth control pills can drive down your free testosterone levels and you'll have low testosterone. The problem is, women start getting into their 40s, what you start seeing is it's kind of like the car that's running out of gas. So it'll start sputtering and you can have issues where you have low progesterone, which is insomnia is a big one. Low progesterone, you don't sleep well, you feel more anxious, you feel agitated. Then you add high estrogen levels to that and you feel like you want to choke someone out. I jokingly call that choke a bitch syndrome. Like you people that don't deserve to be choked out are getting choked out. And it's because you're constantly being stimulated by the estrogen in your body and the progesterone's not coming in to calm you down. And that's super common because your brain is starting to not communicate as well with the ovaries when you hit your 40s. And so that I always say this, your brain needs certain things to survive. It needs to run your heart. It needs to run itself. It needs to run, you know, the kidneys and the stomach and a couple other things. Hormones aren't necessarily, except for thyroid and cortisol, they're not necessary for survival. Yet it's a very intricate system. It takes a lot of energy for your body to run that system perfectly. So when you are in a time of super stress or you're not eating well or you're not healthy, it's going to shut that down first because it takes so much energy to work it, but it doesn't need it. So you're going to shut that down. And so that's why you're going to start seeing some of these imbalances is because you're in stress mode or whatever, and it's just trying to function.
Yeah. And I was going to ask about that is how much does stress impact hormones? And you think about so many women, I mean, their lives are so stressful between raising children and working careers and, you know, they can fill in the blank. So, I mean, how many are coming into and just like, I just can't do this anymore. But it's, you know, there's so much stress is causing the hormone balance, but then the hormone imbalance then is causing more stress in a way. It's like this vicious cycle of there's no win and there's like no relief in sight is how it can feel.
Well, the thing is, like a classic example, last week I had a lady come in that's, I want to say 37, 3 kids under the age of 7. She's a pharmaceutical rep, so she spends a lot of time in the car. She drives 150, 200 miles a day. She doesn't eat super well because she doesn't have a whole lot of time. When she gets home, she's exhausted and she's got to take care of the kids. And so she's burning the candle at both ends with a blowtorch. You know, she doesn't have a whole lot left. And so looking at her hormones, she was very low in cortisol, which is an adrenal hormone. And I I tell the story. So I believe that each of these hormone imbalances, and I have 12 main ones, has a storyline attached to it. And in her case, based on her hormone imbalance, it's called the saboteur, and that's low cortisol. She is sabotaging her own health at the expense of everything else. So her kids, her job, her, you know, her husband, she's taking care of everybody but herself. And so now she's at this phase where, and the phase prior to the saboteur is the workaholic, somebody that works their butt off. So their cortisol is super high, and now she's crashed and burned. And when I tell her this story, and this is just, I'm not like a genius. This story comes from listening to thousands of women tell this very similar story. When I tell her this story, she starts crying because it resonates. And then I can help her with, I have a 6-step process of that I call SHINES, which is spiritual practices, hormonal modulation, infaceuticals, which is basically information to the body. So acupuncture, essential oils, things like that, nutrition, exercise, and supplementation. So you don't have to do all of those, but you can, only one of those steps is physician mediated. The other five are self-care. You know, you can do them on your own. And so this woman needs to, one, she needs to not work out. She's already exhausted. And yet she feels this pressure to work out because that's what society tells her. We got to work out. In her case, I told her, just walk. You don't need to go run. You don't need to do all this extra, you know, extra stuff. And now, and changing her diet around and packing food ahead of time. And I told her to take a supplement that had some desiccated adrenal bovine adrenal gland in it. And within 3 days, just from that, she felt like a completely different person. Now, that didn't fix the problem. The problem fix is going to be longer term, dealing with, you know, like for a spiritual practice, you know, trying meditation or yoga or something that's low impact. And then, you know, trying acupuncture, getting massages, you know, stuff like that, kind of long-term effects. So it's may not be an easy fix, but it's something you can do most of the time on your own.
So if someone is experiencing some type of feel bad symptoms and they believe it's hormone related and they come to see you, what happens next?
Well, basically just have a consult. Most of the time there's two good ways to check hormones. One is blood and the other is urine. Blood, the pros with blood, it's covered by your insurance. It's quick. It's very accurate because it's blood. It also returns very quickly. So within about 2 to 3 days, you're going to get your results. Blood is also the only way you can check thyroid and vitamin D. The downside to blood is that it's only accurate while the needle is in your arm. So it's a very limited, it's like a snapshot of you right then and there. Urine is very accurate as well. The pros to urine is that it not only gives me all of your sex hormones, but it gives me detoxification pathways. So I know how you break down your estrogen. It gives me cortisol, which is super important. Melatonin, vitamin B6 and B12, dopamine levels, norepinephrine. So it gives me a lot more information about you. It doesn't check thyroid. It doesn't check vitamin D. It's a 24-hour test. So it's a bigger picture of you rather than a snapshot. The downside to urine is that it's about $350, not covered by insurance, and it takes about 3 weeks to get the results back. So depending on which way, I have a lot of women that will do blood, just blood, because they want to use their insurance. If that's the case, we get the blood tests. I talk to you about a week later. I come up with a plan based on what I'm seeing on the blood work. And then I usually will see everybody back in about 4 to 6 weeks. I will also consult online. So if people want to see me out of state and they, you know, I can give you a consult. I may not be able to call in prescriptions depending on what it is. Testosterone is a controlled substance. So sometimes that one's hard to call in. But if I can see people physically once a year, then I can prescribe for a year. I have some patients that will do blood because they want an immediate answer. And then they'll also do the urine test. And then so 3 weeks later, I'll get the urine in and we'll back up what I've already started them on with the results from the urine test. And I think the Dutch test, the urine is a great test. Maybe once every 8 to 12 months, it's great. And blood is maybe, you know, if you need it, maybe once every 3 months. And I like blood just because it's covered by insurance. You don't have to spend a lot of money.
Yeah, and I just did the Dutch test with you, and my results just came back. So I'm looking forward to to having my consult with you. And I like doing this every 6 months because we're always changing just based on life and stressors or, you know, age or like we're always changing because life is never constant the same. So I can't wait to see my results from this 6 months as compared to last 6 months. And then it's always adjusting. It's like, it's not a one-time fix and then you're done with that. It's to me, it's part of the self-care. We're aging. Hormones is a big part of that. Let me check in with this, like with other things that I'm testing on a semi-regular basis and just build that in and to be a little bit ahead of getting to the place where you're just completely wiped and empty. And I was there when I got sick a few years back. I mean, I had no hormones. I mean, I was, you know, because I burned the candle at both ends with a blowtorch and suffered the consequences. So let's say that's hormonally when things aren't feeling great. What if you feel pretty good? Do you recommend anything like hormones for more optimization, anti-aging, regeneration, anything like that? Are you more on the, hey, things aren't working, let's try to get you to a good normal?
So if it depends, it's two things. One is lab values and the other is what the patient is telling me. So if I have a woman that comes in that says, I'm tired all the time, which is fairly common, my hair is falling out or it's thinning, and I look at the three hormones we look at there would be cortisol, thyroid, and testosterone. Now, probably 95% of the time, something's going to be off. And it is about optimization. So if I have a patient who is her free T3, which is her active thyroid hormone, a normal is 2.2 to, say, 4.2, which means 3.3 would be 50th percentile. And let's say she comes in at 2.7. Okay, it's 25th percentile, but she feels horrible. She's giving me a lot of symptoms, hair falling out, tired all the time, cold all the time. Then I'm going to recommend that she take some thyroid because it's normal, but maybe it's not normal for her. You know, I mean, it's maybe she would feel better at 3.5, which is still normal, but we're almost, you know, what if 4.2, it's almost double. So testosterone is a great one because normal testosterone is 0.1 to 6.4. So let's say you come in at 0.2, which is a very common level that I see all the time. I could multiply that 30-fold and it would still be normal, okay? But you might feel a hell of a lot better. Now, if you told a guy you were going to multiply his testosterone 30-fold, he'd be like, oh, hell yeah, I'm going to love that. But for some reason, we look at women, especially with testosterone, and say, oh, you don't need it. Oh, it's not a big deal. Oh, it's normal. But with guys, it's like, oh, your testosterone is low. We got to fix it. And so you have to look at the number and you have to look at the patient and then you have to see them back. So it's like, if I start you on something, I want to see you back in 4 to 6 weeks because I start people on low doses and maybe it's not enough. And so I'll draw blood again and we have to fine tune things. But if you keep up if you keep it up and you keep up with visits, most, I would say more than half the time we get it right on the first try, but it takes a couple of visits sometimes to dial it in. But I haven't really had anybody that hasn't been helped. Occasionally you'll get a patient that's already seen like six other doctors and she's tried all these things. But usually, even if your hormones are perfect, you know, there's other things I can recommend, you know, like acupuncture, and I have, you know, a good team that I can refer people out to.
Yeah. So do you see anything pretty consistently that, you know, just like you're not surprised. It's just so consistent that you're almost going to, with any woman that comes in, you're probably going to, okay, this is probably going to be the case. Like, what are you noticing pretty regularly these days when women are coming in to see you because they're not feeling right?
The number one thing, as I alluded to, was testosterone being low. It's just really common. The second thing is the estrogen-progesterone ratios are off. So a lot of women, the two biggest hormones I prescribe are progesterone and testosterone. And the typical picture for that is a female that is maybe just, you know, she's gained about 10 pounds, can't get it off. She's not sleeping well. She's irritable. She doesn't feel good about being irritable because it doesn't make sense to her because she's usually not like that. She's just exhausted all the time. Her husband because we're good at this. Men are. He makes her feel bad because she doesn't want to have sex with him anymore. And it's just because she's exhausted. And that makes her feel even worse. And so usually a combination of progesterone, testosterone for those women, I mean, it's sometimes just getting a good night's sleep can fix a lot of things.
Yeah,
and a lot of women, insomnia is just anxiety provoking because they can't sleep. And going to bed is like a major ordeal because they just wonder if I'm going to get sleep tonight. And then they got children and then they got a job and a husband and it just, it's horrible. So sometimes just fixing sleep is like a huge factor.
Yeah. What are you noticing? Like once you, let's say prescribe, like what's the, give me a before and after, like when women are coming back and saying, oh my God, like it feels like you practically saved my life.
I've had women say that. I've had dramatic things. That's usually not the norm, that major drama. What usually happens is we'll get the labs, we'll start on something, and she'll come back in and she'll say, I'm 75% better, which is great, but I'm not exactly where I want to be. And that's when I'll draw blood again and we'll fine tune the dose. But I will say a majority of patients, probably more than 90%, will feel like they're like, okay, this makes a huge difference. I don't know how I was living the other way before because this feels so much better. But there are probably 10% of the patients that I see that it is so dramatic that they have been ignored for so long. And just by giving them a little whiff of thyroid because their free T3 was at the fifth percentile, they can now go to school and they don't fall asleep on their desk. They can function. They can go out with their friends because they're not falling asleep at 4 in the afternoon. And it can really change your life. And I think what happens is you adapt. So you don't know how badly it's affecting you because what you've done is you've just changed your lifestyle to meet this kind of hormone imbalance. So you stay at home, you don't go out with your friends, you've changed your patterns. And then when you finally get it fixed, you're like, oh my gosh, this is what I used to be like. And it makes this massive difference in a lot of women.
Yeah. So we're talking a lot of hormones, let's say to my age group. And then there's my daughter who's 23, who she is really struggled with birth control. It's just effed up her hormones and her system. And she got an implant and took it out and all, I mean, just all in like 4 or 5 different types. And I mean, it just completely messed her up hormonally. So do you have any recommendations or what do you have to say about young women that are on birth control and don't plan on having children for anytime soon?
Well, again, birth control pills are there. I think it's part of the, you know, it's part of the lexicon. It's good for a lot of women. I think we use it way too much. I think we use it in age groups that should never be on it. It's a knee jerk for a lot of problems that unfortunately shouldn't be used for. But a lot of women also don't do well on it, like your daughter. And if they're not doing well on it, I'm a firm proponent of these new fertility tracking devices. iFertracker and Daisy are two big ones right now. And like say for iFertracker, what it does is you put this patch on before you go to bed at night and the device takes your temperature like thousands of times while you're sleeping and sends it to your phone. And it actually will show you if you do it religiously for 3 months, it will tell you with a 99.5% accuracy when you're ovulating. So that's a couple, there's a great, three great things about that. One is you know when not to get pregnant because you're ovulating. Two, you know more about your body. So like if your discharge changes, if your mucus changes, if you have a pain in your belly, you know that you're ovulating, you know where you are in your cycle and you can start to learn more about your cycle. And three would be if you are trying to get pregnant, you know when to have sex because you know when you're ovulating. The thing about these devices, they're like $15 a month. It's a $100 investment up front. They're completely hormone free. They teach you more about your body and there's really no risk. And actually, if you look at the studies, they're just as effective at preventing pregnancy as birth control pills.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
So they're good. It's just, it takes a little bit more you know, your daughter would probably be a person that would be good at it because she's way more involved with herself. And but for my daughter, when she was 15, or, you know, birth control pill for her was something I needed, that she wanted, because I think she was nervous about getting pregnant. And you know, you just got to know the side effects and whatnot. But I think for women that struggle with birth control pills, definitely these hormone-free fertility tracking devices are great. Or if you can do IUDs, those, you know, I think a lot of people don't like IUDs, but obviously it's, if there's a lesser of evils, I think the IUD is a lesser evil than a birth control pill in most instances, especially if you're not wanting hormones. They do have the copper one. It's just, you know, sometimes they can be painful being put in. They can have complications. So, you know, it's another discussion you have to have with your doctor, but there are definitely other options out there.
Yeah, that's good to know. Well, is there anything that I haven't asked that you think it would be important to convey when it comes to women's health and hormones?
I think the main thing that I see a lot right now is that just even in this day and age, that women are still really minimized by the healthcare system. And, you know, they're still, it's still like, oh, I can't tell you how many times I hear you're just getting older. There is absolutely no reason why, as you age, you should be completely miserable. Are you going to have aches and pains? Sure. I mean, that's going to happen. Are you going to have times when you're tired? Sure, that's going to happen. But life-changing, you know, fatigue, or, you know, other, you know, hot flashes, insomnia, that's why we tell women that, oh, you're just getting normal, you're just getting older, deal with it. Because we'd never tell a guy that. I think that normal, I always say normal isn't normal. If you feel hormonal, or if you feel off, if you feel like something is off, don't just go back home and be frustrated. Find somebody else, find another doctor. I can't tell you how many times, by the time women sometimes see me, I'm their third, fourth doctor. We're out there, there's people out there that can help. You just got to stay with it. You know yourself better than anybody else. And if you know that that's not the way that you want to live your life, then you need to keep at it and find the person that can help you.
Yeah. And it sounds like it's really the blend of, you know, potentially finding the right doctor, like you said, that can prescribe, that can help, that can make interpretations of the data and do the tests and give that, you know, that advice and that expertise and those prescriptions. Prescriptive advice, even combined with lifestyle. I mean, taking hormones isn't the magic pill. I mean, it's still the lifestyle factors ahead of that. Like, how are we eating? What are our stress levels? You know, do we have more other balance in our life? Like you said, yoga or meditation or something, because life is more stressful today. We're living longer. We're handling more things, and there's just a lot more information and things coming at us. And it's like, how do we manage, you know, both of these at the same time?
Well, like I said, 80+% of my prescription is self-care. I'm there for the prescription of hormones, and the hormones are going to get you a faster result because it's a medication, but long-term health, long-term change is going to come from you doing what you just said, changing your nutrition, getting on the right exercise regimen, looking at possible supplementation if there's something there that needs to be supplemented. You know, looking at getting a massage twice a month, or doing acupuncture, or signing up for a yoga class. I mean, that's actually the hard part. You know, it's like the hormones are easy. It literally will make you feel better in about 2 days, but it's not necessarily fixing the problem. It is fixing the deficiency, but it's not fixing the lifestyle. And you're right. That's definitely the bigger of the two pieces.
Yeah. And I was just thinking too, one more question on just really the methylation and the breakdown of the hormones, because can there be danger for those that maybe are prescribing, let's say, even bioidentical hormones, but they're not looking at how the estrogen's breaking down? And there are a lot of these SNPs and different factors like I have, like I don't methylate well. I don't break these things down very well. So my body needs extra assistance through making sure I have some glutathione, making sure I have some of these other cofactors built in. And so supplementation is a very important, I believe it's a very important part of supplementing the hormones in a way, just to make sure that they're breaking down correctly, that without that assistance, I don't know what happens if the estrogen doesn't break down.
Well, the important piece to know is, and like you said, methylation, there's also, there's three different, so you have three different types of estrogen, estradiol, estriol, and estrone. Estrone is the one that your body has to detoxify to get rid of. And estrone can break down into three things. One piece is called 16-methoxyestrone, and that just goes back to estriol, which is actually a good form of estrogen. One breakdown product is called 16-methoxyestrone, and that can damage DNA, and that can increase cancer risks. And then that's 4-methoxy. The third one is 2-methoxyestrone, which is, we think, cancer protective, and that's the one that you want people to go down the pathway of, that with methylation. So we can know on the Dutch test, that urine test, if you are pushing yourself that way or not. Do you need more methylated B vitamins? Do you need DIM or diindole methane to help push in that direction? The other thing is, for some women, they just have too much estrogen. They either are taking too much or they're making too much. And the best ways to get rid of estrogen like that are to increase fiber intake, because you eliminate estrogen through your stool. But it's also important to know what your family history is. Do you have a genetic predisposition to breast cancers? I always say that estrogen doesn't cause breast cancer. If it did, every woman would get breast cancer. It can definitely, breast cancers are caused by many different things, from where do you live, what do you eat, how old were you when you had your first period, you know, did you breastfeed, all those things. And estrogen, that 4-methoxyestrone is definitely one factor. But estrogen doesn't cause breast cancer per se. If it did, every woman would get breast cancer. It can potentiate an estrogen receptor positive cancer cell for sure. But, you know, you need to know your history, and you need to know estrogen is very helpful with bones and skin and so many other things as well. So, but yes, you need to know. I think it's good to know. Is it a need? It's a kind of a new concept. We didn't really do this years ago. So if you'd like to know, the best way to do that is to do the urine testing. And I think it's definitely, the more information you can get about yourself, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. A few more questions to complete our conversation. Is one question I like to ask, that obviously this is your professional side and everybody listening can just hear that you know what you're talking about. And if they're having any hormonal issues, I'm sure you're going to have a long line knocking at your door. But on the personal side, if I were to ask you and said, or if you were to say, if you really knew me, Christina, like if you really, really knew me, if you knew me as Sean, you would know that.
My superpower is listening. I think as an only child, and then coming up through the women's health channels, I've learned to listen. But what's funny about that is that I'm divorced, so obviously I don't listen all the time. But I think the thing about me too is that I'm just human. I'm a human being. I think my flaws are actually what make me approachable. I wouldn't consider myself to be pompous or stuck up, even though I'm a physician. I think people assume that you are. But I think, yeah, I love to listen. I love listening to stories, and I love reading biographies. So there you go. I'm a pretty exciting individual.
I love that. All right. Tell me something that you're really proud of.
I have 4 children, and I'm proud that I'm still alive because of that. They are all challenging, but looking at my life and the things that I've accomplished, MD, PhD, those are all things that kind of, you know, they can go away. But when you put 4 people out into the world that are doing, you know, I have a daughter that's in Denver, and she's paying her own bills, and she's loving life, and she's getting married soon. And my 23-year-old's applying. He just had his interviews for med school today at the University of Arizona. My 18-year-old's going to college. My 15-year-old, even though he's wrecked 3 cars, he's going to college. My 15-year-old is like into theater and all this stuff. And you look at this and it's like, you feel like I did something right. You know, even though they drive you nuts and they challenge you every step of the way, when you're gone from this planet, those 4 people will hopefully still be here and will be living their lives. And it's just, it's because, partially because of me.
I love that. All right. One final question. And that is, I like to do a little myth busting. I only really bring unconventional, really countercultural, like thinkers, actors to the show. So do a little myth busting. Is there anything that you see on a regular basis, like just one big fat lie you'd like to call out?
Well, I already called out the myth of estrogen causing cancer. That's always my big one. I think that for a big myth is that my colleagues will probably hate me for this, is that we need to have doctors to live healthy lives. I think that, like I said, we are there when you need us. Even naturopaths, even homeopaths, the body has an innate ability to heal itself. I think that's what we do. We heal ourselves. The problem is we have disease because we have disease, D-I-S-E-A-S-E, disease because of stress. We're not taking care of ourselves. And medicine is a multi-billion dollar business. So is naturopathy. So are all these other cash-taking businesses because we can't take care of ourselves. And I think the myth is that we have to live miserable lives. I think that, the point, and there's a lot of happy people out there, but I think that anybody can achieve that. And I am the biggest, don't get me wrong, I am the hardest headed human on the planet. I am the worst patient in the world. If I could listen to myself, I could probably heal a lot of my own problems. But I think we have the ability to heal ourselves more than physicians do.
I love that. All right. Well, for everybody listening, Sean, you'll be speaking at the Wealthy Wealthy Live event coming up February 28th and 29th and talking about everything and be up close and personal. So anyone coming can listen to you speak as well as talk to you. So thank you for that and enjoy the rest of your trip in Maui.
I will.
And everything, I'll be linking to everything about you in the show notes. So anybody wanting to get your material, sign up for your upcoming book and just connect with you, we'll make it very easy. And I'm just very grateful to have you in my life. So thank you very much.
Bye.
If you're inspired by today's show and you would like to learn more about my money coaching, here's what I need you to do. Head over to Kristina.com/call. That's KRISSTINA.com/call. And book an appointment to speak with me. In less than 30 minutes, we will get absolutely clear on why you're not earning enough no matter how hard you work, why you can never get ahead no matter how much you earn, and what you need to know in order to finally have the time and money freedom you're working so hard for. Remember, you're not alone. 95% of Americans are one life event away from financial crisis. I will be the first person to teach you why this is the case and how to be in the other 5% that has no fear around money. No one can do this alone. You need expert help. I've helped everyone from modest earning professionals to those earning 8 figures per year get off the financial hamster wheel and finally win the money game. I look forward to helping you too. Head over to Kristina.com/call and book your call with me today. I'm Kristina Wise. Thank you for spending your valuable attention with me today. We will meet again soon.